Welcome to The Author Speaks. I'm Helen Thomas of Women Writing Architecture, speaking today with architect, joiner and gardener Judith Losing about her book London Arboretum. Judith is a director at East in London and member of the experimental choir Muzark. In the tree talks that Judith organised at the Barbican for the Architecture Foundation in 2023, the stage was populated by artists, architects and activists, foragers and singers, sometimes all together at the same time, in a rich and multi-layered celebration of the urban forest and its individual characters. Joining me and Judith in conversation is architect and filmmaker Cristina Monteiro. She is an architect concerned with conservation, both of buildings and nature, and she's a founding director of DKCM. Her work explores the complex history and ecology of places. A champion of equitable access to nature, she has recently directed a documentary film called London Grows for the Wild City Campaign. The subject of our discussion today, London Arboretum, collects together different voices and perspectives on the presence of trees in London. Somehow, it captures the special intensity of the tree talks, especially in the many voices and characters included within its covers. Interspersed in between the essays are visual and written portraits of individual trees. These introduce the different species that inhabit London and include enticing drawings, archival material, and different ways of mapping the presence and meaning of trees in the city. One of the species that we meet in the book is the tree fern, and the representative chosen for the book lives in the Crossrail station at Canary Wharf. This special moment of the city's forest has been chosen by Judith as a setting for our meeting, which is taking place in the depths of a London December. The protected roof garden above the ticket hall and platforms, which are sited on the meridian, as Judith points out in her book, is a global garden that is populated by plants from around the world. So Judith, thank you so much for agreeing to talk to us about your wonderful book. You start by saying that London is a forest, which is a powerful, hopeful statement about a densely populated city whose sealed ground surfaces seem endless and ubiquitous.
Yeah, London is a forest by UN definition, and that's about a certain size. It needs to be 0.5 hectares, it needs to have trees higher than 5 meters tall, and it needs to have a canopy cover over 10%. But those are kind of metrics that don't really describe the political or historical or cultural significance of forests, and it sometimes feels like propaganda or wishful thinking, and that we're hoping that trees can save us, and the more trees the better. And that was a little bit the starting point of the book. Ken Walpole writes a sort of long piece in the book about forests as a legal landscape, and he refers back to Oliver Rackham and the Charter of the Forest, which came in place in 1217, where they were given rights to the commoners, given rights to the forest, while the forest is in some way seen as a lawless place or a place of magic or a place where strange things happen there. The forest also has its own logic and rules, which is about no boundaries and a network of places and no hierarchies, and that's sometimes very different to how the city feels today. So while, yes, it's maybe a useful image for people to keep in mind, it's also, I also find this idea of just saying because we have a certain number of trees that London is a forest quite problematic. And I think that's sort of one of the starting points for the book. Yeah, where does this obsession with trees come from? So.
For me, it raises the question that the cultural and social meanings of the forest, and that's what is lost. You can't just, it's just not a numerical idea of the number of trees, but it's actually the social meaning of a place. And you express kind of misgivings about the place that we're in now, which is very much like, you know, a woodland in the middle of Canary Wharf.
I think I had quite a few conversations with Ken Walpole about this idea of typology and what this means. So if it's a forest, then it comes with certain rules and regulation. If something is trying to be like this Wardian case, then that comes with connotations of colonialism and bringing plants from elsewhere and caring for plants and having the right to take something from one place to another and implant them. So yeah, in this place there's an amazing video time lapse online which shows you the amount of stuff that goes into making of the place. So we're sitting on 4 stories of concrete with sort of crossrail underneath and shopping centers and street levels, and then there are these spiral form formos and concrete curbs and topsoil and sand and other soils imported and stainless steel cables to keep the trees in place and plastic piping to irrigate them and pipes going up the tree fern so they get enough moisture. So there's an incredible amount of engineering that goes into us thinking, oh, we're in a bit of woodland here, or in a bit of Thailand. Or it's such a privilege to be able to have the means to do it, but it comes at the expense of other places. And
the book is absolutely beautiful. And it just feels like it's one of these books that you can pick up and find something different every time you read it. Even if you read it cover to cover, like I've done now a couple of times, there's still new things to find. And it's because it feels like it's been a journey for you. And I wanted to know how it started. Yeah, and if you could share with us how the journey was and any moments.
Yeah, thank you. It started both with me being a little bit unhappy with the roles we were given in the practice that I work. So I'm a director at East and we work a lot in public realm. And when the public sector jobs died down, we started working a lot for developers and architects collaborating on master planning. And that's very enjoyable. But the amount of pressure that is being put on the green spaces and the public spaces in all developments is so huge that we felt as landscape architects we had to deliver everything from urban cooling to play to sustainable drainage to air quality to amenity space to relaxation to urban greening. And it felt like trees were the one thing that, yes, the sort of the minimum maintenance and maximum gain for your money. I got a bit upset about thinking that sort of trees can save us all, and it just seemed like a little bit too easy a way out. And there was this term that I came across in all these design meetings that, obviously, we need to make the space work really hard. And as if that was a virtue, not an admission that there isn't enough space or there isn't enough, that we're just putting too many demands on one single space. So when then this call from the Architecture Foundation for researcher to work with them in sort of widening their audience and developing a theme around the future of London, I thought this idea of public spaces and green spaces and trees was a good hook to get a conversation going around the role really of public spaces and how we want to live together in the cities. I love trees, I'm interested in trees, I'm a gardener and I love planting, but it's in the way the trees were just a hook to get that conversation going and to engage a number of people that were not necessarily coming to Architecture Foundation talks. And then this interest in trees and planting also then allowed me to access sort of different groups and invite them and allow myself to visit different places at different times. And the writing developed very slowly because I'm not naturally drawn to writing. That's too sort of more of a diagram and list maker.
You mentioned encountering lots of different people, and I think that's one of the really amazingly generous things about the book. There are so many voices coming from different places. And I guess you were encountering trees, I think, as Christina asked, how did you find which trees you were going to talk about, but also how did you find which people? And I think that kind of leads to a question I have about your tree talks. Unfortunately, I wasn't in London when you were having them, but I heard about them from so many different people. They sound like they were extraordinary events, really unusual. Is there a connection between your tree talks and the book itself?
Yeah, there was an early idea for the structure of the book in that I wanted to describe these different typologies that I saw in London. The talks were almost a way to invite different people that I was interested in, and really to see people on stage that I don't usually see much in architectural talks. So it was about inviting activists and artists and landscape gardeners and who else was there? Yeah, musicians. The musicians came about because we had this agreement that the Architecture Foundation has with the Barbican about renting their concert hall and the big spaces for a certain number of times, and it's usually for the big talk. So I wanted these talks to be more inviting to a wider range of people, and having this privilege of having this huge hall with an acoustic sort of led itself to inviting musicians as well. Just bringing in other people into the conversation, because we should talk with more than architects about the city.
People that I know, they weren't architects. One of your intentions with the book, I mean, it definitely speaks to architects very clearly. I mean, it's almost has in some parts of it, and there are different parts with different characters. Some parts of it are really like a manual in a way, and I find that fascinating. And I guess one aspect of that manual is the way that you've made typologies. which architects love typologies. And I think it's really fabulous that you've made your own typology. And okay, so there's typologies of trees and species, but then you've made spatial ones. I mean, you have five categories of objects: strings, fillings, collections, and residues. And then you disperse types amongst those categories, such as deer park and orchard, thicket, embankment, island, and circus. So really connecting the trees to urban kinds of places. How did you get to that way of thinking about how you wanted to organise the book?
I can't quite remember. I think one part of it was that I was just finding these different spaces, and I was sort of looking for the purest type for each space, and then within the spaces there were obviously similarities that led itself to this different grouping. So there are these special types, but also ecological types, like what's a remnant and what's been constructed and what has adapted by itself. So I think it started with the spaces first, and then finding names for these spaces. And sometimes the names are provocations about a clarity of conversation that we have, because again, like in these public spaces that we design, they often tend to be the same size, and sometimes they're called urban forest, and sometimes they're called piazza, and sometimes they're called neighborhood zone, play zones, so there are all these names for spaces that could look exactly the same. They all have a bit of timber furniture and a bit of granite paving and some young trees. And I was really trying to be more upfront and careful about how we name things. So, for example, sustainable urban drainage. If you talk to lay people about SUTs, they don't know what we're talking about. And really, it's just another way of making a drain, making the water from the street drain away. So finding names that are evocative was sort of part of the fun of making this puzzle of what the different types are. Yeah. And a lot of places could also be, they're ambivalent, so there's crossovers also. They're not completely clear cut.
I really enjoy throughout the book the way that a species of trees is a protagonist, but there's also a place always attached to the. And I love the way that it's like a window into a story about a place, but then it's dissected as well in terms of like more global things. So it's a kind of push and pull of scales. And obviously it's also really visual, the way you're like dissecting that particular tree through so many lenses. And I wonder whether you could tell us a little bit more about that process as well.
Yes, okay, yes. I mean, Arnold Circus is a good one. I mean, some things come with the structure of the book, because I only wanted to feature every type of tree once, and there's so many London planes that I think the more interesting, and there's certain things you can read up in books and on websites and find out, but I think the more interesting stories and the places I relate most to are the ones that I visited a number of times and have a personal relationship with. So with Arnold Circus, the initial story is the slum clearance and making the public space and planting plane trees as part of making this garden. I got interested in the story of Kossov, the painter, and there's then this gardening friends of groups who planted a tree, and Michael Marriott made a sign, and that was the story. And then I sort of visited again, and then I actually heard from Leila, who's running a cafe around there, when I was asking her about it. She was saying, oh, actually the tree has died and you should talk to the friends. And then the friends told me that yes, the tree had died, but there was another side shoot that had come up in sort of a similar place, so they could just slightly twist the sign. So a lot of the stories come from actually working and talking to the people and places developing more. And now, and I wanted the launch to be in a public space, and that was quite a challenge, because you can't book the space and hire a bouncer and, you know, make sure the weather is good, everything you need to sort of plan with lots of contingencies. Yeah, so it's nice how some of the stories have become relationships with people.
This diagram is really beguiling. And again, you can lose yourself in it, because it's trying to make a time frame of the trees and interweave them with the themes and the places. And it's just such a wonderful, it really is a nice window into your brain. But I wonder again about the process of this drawing, whether you were sort of adding to it or whether it came at the end. Could you tell us a little bit about the process that you use drawing and diagramming to analyze the places where trees are. And I think that's such a architectural way of thinking.
That's a nice observation. Yeah, I mean, the diagram Christina's pointing at is indebted to Charles Jenks, and he makes these chronograms of architectural history or architectural tribes. There are many, many versions of this drawing. So yeah, it started quite early on, trying to figure out what came first. And it was again Ken who sort of prompted this, saying this typology is really, you need to look into this and understand what comes from what. And it's sort of, it's just me trying to get my head around when, first of all, when different things happened and how political movements or certain events triggered things. So, for example, the Crystal Palace exhibition in Crystal Palace, they had the first water toilet, and the invention of the water toilet led to the drainage of London being completely overexposed and to great stink, and then the Act of Parliament deciding to build the outfall sewer. So that then led to the embankment and the idea of street trees is a relatively recent idea. So it's sort of, yeah, it's a little bit understanding what if there were moments in history that triggered certain events, but it's also just for me trying to understand where all these different spaces came from. And it's quite fun in retrospect now to see that there was these pleasure gardens in, when was it, 1700, and there was this moment of adventure playgrounds coming up in the 70s, and then they completely lose funding and possibly also significance. And then there's other spaces like commons, which are woods and scrubs and ways that remain important even though they're enclosures. So it's somehow the thinking about the different spaces that was an ongoing project, but the mapping of the spaces on them was sort of happened towards the end only.
Well, I think both of us want to end the conversation with asking you about your thoughts about the future and I don't know how the transformation of the ground and what we call urban spaces by removing the car from it. And I just wondered whether that's anything that you've thought about, or is that going off on a tangent?
No, it's an interesting thought. The thing that comes to mind immediately is an exhibition. I don't know if you've seen it at the time. It must have been in the late 90s, where we also as East were invited. It was called Car Free London, and it was about, by the Architecture Foundation, about developing ideas for Car Free London. I think Muff had said something that I thought was so interesting, and what they said was, we're lacking the imagination for what we can have instead, because it's so much ingrained in our day-to-day perception. I mean, we have the same, we just won this big project pedestrianizing Oxford Street, and the image of Oxford Street is so much related to the buses and taxis going through there, so it's almost impossible to imagine what else it could be. Yeah, the default is then very quickly to put green trees in the images, but what does that really mean?
But I think that also relates to what you were saying earlier about the urban forest isn't just trees, it's actually things that you're allowed to do and who owns it, and there's a socio-political aspect to what the meaning of space is. It isn't to do with what's planted.
I also wanted to ask about, so the book is both the process of you exploring but also hosting the tree talk and talking with many, many people, and obviously the book is just a very edited version of that long journey and all those new relationships that you made through this process of the research on trees. I wonder whether you have a similar diagram for all the people that you come across, and I wonder whether you could see that kind of constellation of people continuing this conversation, because I think it's so important.
That's a really nice idea. I can immediately see that Venn diagram of who relates to you. I don't have that written down or drawn up, but roughly the tree talks split into themes around care, and one was about money, and one was about protest and trespassing, and that led into different avenues. But yes, that's a very sweet idea. I'd love to do that actually. And also, it's been nice to be able to put different people in touch with each other that hadn't necessarily come across. So, yeah, that's been a great privilege in that sense, that you can organise something or ask people to write something, even if they're not being paid for it. Yeah.